Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Everyone, this is Rob Wolf, and welcome to episode number 32 of Unformidable, where we take a look back at some of the less heralded Mets in our beloved franchise's quirky history, as every player who dons the orange and blue is, in their own way, unformidable. I don't have a ton of setup today. The Mets have had been eerily quiet this offseason, signed a couple of middling starters, finally just added someone to their porous bullpen. But, I like to try to match a player with something going on in the current day, wherever possible, but this didn't really have much. I did recently celebrate a birthday. I turned 12 shortly after the team's last World Championship, and I thought many, many more were to come with that team. And now, 30-plus years later, I'm starting to inch uncomfortably close to that just one more in my lifetime, please, territory, without much light at the end of the tunnel. Actually, I remember when the Mets traded R.A. Dickey in the offseason, my friend Steve, who's older than I am, was really upset, and I was like, oh no, it's a great move. Not that I didn't love R.A. Dickey, but yeah, it's like, this team's got to rebuild, that's how we'll get good again, and Steve was just like, I just want to see them win one more time before I die, Robert. And I laughed, not at Steve, I mean, but it's like, oh, that's a silly thought. But that thought's really starting to creep into my head. At any rate, it's my birthday, it's the holidays, and apropos of nothing, free agents, anniversaries, dates in Mets history, I'm just going to pick one of my personal favorite random Mets of all time. It was a dark period of Mets fandom in the mid-90s, but for a moment there was a very brief shining light, perhaps because he had a sweet swing, seemed to have a slick glove, and played the same position as the favorite of my youth, one Keith Hernandez, or perhaps simply because he was young and handsome and had a cool name. But boy, did I and my friends really latch on to Rico Bronya. Rico Joseph Bronya was born April 18th, 1970, in Massachusetts, but he grew up primarily in Connecticut, where he attended Watertown High School. Bronya was a true star athlete in high school. He played baseball, basketball, and football, and in fact was an all-state quarterback, winning a high school state championship in 1986, so matching the Mets with a 1986 championship. In fact, he was such a good football player, Bronya initially signed a letter of intent to play quarterback at Clemson University when he was in high school. So that was 86. I don't really follow college sports a ton because, you know, I grew up in a state with real professional athletics and don't really care about that. But, you know, I don't think that Clemson in 86 was Clemson that they are today as a perennial national title contender, but that was, you know, obviously still, I think, a big school and a mark of, I assume, what a good football player Bronya must have been. But he was a true Northeast boy, and he preferred baseball and chose to pursue a career in baseball when he was drafted by the Detroit Tigers in the first round of the 1988 June Amateur Draft. He was the 26th overall pick. Bronya had a great year in AA in 1990, and I guess combined with that prospect pedigree of being a first-round draft pick, prior to the 1991 season, he was the number 35 prospect overall in baseball per Baseball America. And I've said before, you know, in my memory growing up, there wasn't this wall-to-wall prospect coverage that there is today, or prospect hugging or hoarding, but yeah, that's still pretty good. He unfortunately seemed to plateau. He struggled greatly in AAA in 1991 and even got demoted back to AA from AAA. And he actually was not having a great season in 1992 back in AAA Toledo again. He did manage to make his MLB debut that year, getting called up briefly in August to Detroit when, I think, because of injury. So he made his major league debut on August 8th, 1992, and he got a hit in his very first major league at bat, blooping a double down the left field line off of Dave Steeb in a game which was started for the Detroit Tigers by the equally unformidable Walt Terrell. Over that two-week span that he came up in August, Ronya went 5-for-26 as a Detroit Tiger. He hit his first career Major League home run against the New York Yankees off of Melito Perez, who was unforgettable in his own right. He and his brother Pasquale. If only one of them spent a day with the Mets, that would be one hell of an unformidable. But at any rate, he had that first career home run August 11th off of Melito Perez, but was sent back down on August 20th and continued to struggle in AAA. He presumably fell out of favor with the Tigers organization. It seemed like maybe a squandering of a first-round pick or one that would not quite come to fruition. So before the start of the 1994 season, Bronya came to the Mets in a trade, basically a swap of disappointing late first-round draft picks. The Mets sent Alan Zinter, a first baseman who they tabbed in the first round in 1989, to Detroit in exchange for the lefty first baseman Rico Bronya. Definitely, as I recall, a very under-the-radar transaction, not moving the dial at all. I don't have any recollection of the trade taking place or having any expectations that we had acquired a former first-round pick and that he might make any impact on the Major League club whatsoever. Perhaps that's because there wasn't a ton to be excited about as a Mets fan or as a baseball fan in 1994. Well, I take that back. There was a lot of baseball to be excited about. There was Matt Williams and Ken Griffey Jr. looking like they might make a run at Roger Maris, Tony Gwynn looking like he could make a run at hitting 400. But with the specter of a strike looming, it was hard to get too enthusiastic about everything going on. And of course, the Mets were coming off complete bottoming out of their dynasty that almost was. In the early 90s, coming off some atrocious years in 92 and 93, and the ever-frustrating, in my opinion, Dallas Green at the helm. So heading into 94, at least, I was not too excited about the Mets, to say the least. But they actually had a decent season that year. It started to reignite the embers of fandom. The 94 Mets started the season with the veteran presence of David Segee at first base, but when the steady, if unspectacular, Segee went down with an injury in late June, Bronya was the natural replacement to come up in AAA. As the previous couple of seasons where he struggled in the Tiger organization, he was having a pretty unremarkable season at AAA. But Bronya hit the ground running with Segee on the DL for 2-3 weeks. He didn't hit the ground running, he hit the ground hitting, and he didn't stop. The only thing that stopped him hit him was that aforementioned player strike, as Bronya essentially wally-pipped Segee, or at least pushed him to the outfield. I don't know if wally-pip found another position or just never got to play again. I've never really known that. I just throw it around as a verb. Memo to myself to look into that. At any rate, Bronya made his Met debut on June 22nd of 1994 at Atlanta against the Braves. He did go 0-for-3 with a walk in that game and actually didn't collect a hit until four games later, June 26th at home against the Pirates, going 2-for-4. And that was just an augured things to come. In his 6th to 8th games as a Met, Bronya homered 3 consecutive games, one homer in each game. A week later, in LA, he'd go 2 for 3 with a home run in 2 consecutive games against the Dodgers. A couple of weeks later, on July 9th and 10th, that second game against the Dodgers pushed his OPS for the season over 1,000 to 1.039, and it would remain there for the rest of the 1994 season. From that series in LA through to close to the last game of the regular season, Bronyo would hit in 23 consecutive starts, a true hitting streak only interrupted by a pair of unsuccessful pinch hitting appearances in mid-July.
I'm Jillian Weinberger, host of The Impact, a podcast from Vox about how powerful people affect the rest of us. This season, we're looking at the big ideas from all the people running for president in 2020.
Hit this opioid crisis head on.
Public option. Move away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency.
And it's going to be a great wall, and it's going to work.
A lot of those ideas have actually been tried before, like that wall Trump wants to build. Nogales, Arizona has had one on its border for decades.
I don't understand why individual people have a right to have a fence, and yet a country can't.
Senator Warren's proposal to end the opioid crisis? It's based on what we did to fight the AIDS epidemic.
We would like to name it the Ryan White Care Act.
And the Green New Deal. Germany tried something similar in 2000.
This is the solution.
This season on The Impact, we have those stories. How the big ideas from 2020 candidates worked or didn't work in other places or at other times. These are the stories that will help us understand what might happen if these proposals get rolled out here in the next 4 years. Subscribe to The Impact on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app to get the first episode on Wednesday, January 8th.
My absolute fondest memory, Rico memory of that season, is attending a game in early August against the mighty Atlanta Braves. An annoying number of Braves fans in attendance, as started to happen in the mid-90s as we were recovering and the Braves were in their nascent dynasty, also a dynasty that never quite was, kind of. But I remember a couple of Braves fans mocking my friend and I for our adoration of Rico and our Rico chants, and you know that he wouldn't even get to get on the field with the mighty Braves. And Bronyo would proceed to go 3 for 4 that night, August 2nd. I had to look in my extensive ticket stub collection. He went 3 for 4, including a tie-breaking 2-run homer in the bottom of the 8th, leading the Mets to a 4-1 victory and sending me into a delight truly unfounded and unwarranted for a team that had just raised its record to 53-54 and would only be playing about another 8 to 10 games before a strike would cancel the rest of the season. But not only was it a fun in-game experience, but after that, by the time that game was over, Bronyo had raised his batting average to .387. At that point in time, his OPS was 1.126, and that's over his first 111 Met plate appearances. Now, I knew nothing in 1994 of small sample sizes and reverting to the mean. I just knew, screw Tony Gwynn, we had a potential 400 hitter of our own. And Bronyo certainly did look the part, from what I remember, you know, probably in hindsight, a good example of, you know, that fallacy of, you know, his swing looked good. He was described as having a great glove, although when I researched this podcast, the statistics don't really back up that idea of him being a defensive whiz. But, you know, first round draft pick, high school quarterback, just like seemed like he looked like an athlete. And I think the Mets, and what I remember their announcers and certainly idealistic young fans, thought we had really discovered an uncovered gem. Perhaps Bronyo was starting to come back down to earth, but as mentioned, the stats hit that peak in that August 2nd game that I just mentioned, but in fact, he only appeared in 7 more games as the season ended. The Mets played their final game of the strike-shortened season August 11th. So Bronya finished the season, the 94 season, with a 351 average, 380 on base percentage, and 626 slugging percentage for just over 1,000, 1.006 OPS. So it was a frustrating, heartbreaking end to a baseball season for any baseball fan, you know, one that didn't see a World Series played. But if there was a light for me as a Met fan, it was that I thought we had found our first baseman of the future. And frankly, the 95 season didn't totally dissuade you from that. The Bronya actually had a really good year for the Mets in 1995. He hit 22 homers, 76 RBIs, hit 289, put up an 827 OPS. Again, you know, it was before I think people had fully appreciated the on-base percentage revolution. And, you know, you could see where maybe the flaws in his game were with the 39 walks versus 111 strikeouts that year. But he still put up, well, not an over 1,000 OPS. He still put up an 827. His OPS plus that year was 119. So he was an above average hitter for the Mets in 1995. And at the age of 25, it really seemed like perhaps a key piece. He also did lead the league in fielding percentage in 95. Again, he caught what he got to, but I guess the range, he was actually pretty much an average fielder in his time with the Mets, but quickly bottomed out, as we'll discuss, in his time after the Mets. Bronya had a very rough 1996, struggling with injuries all through the season, and eventually needed arthroscopic surgery on his right shoulder in June of 96, which short-circuited the difficult season and ultimately wound up ending his Mets career, as the team would trade him to the Philadelphia Phillies in the offseason, and the nascent Rico mania that briefly enveloped Shea in 1994 would go along with it, sadly. Little did I know it actually wouldn't be all that sad for the Mets. The return for Bronya wasn't much, but the Mets would replace him at first base with the incredible, underrated, underappreciated, delightful, wonderful John Olerud. Keep him around in 2000. Maybe we have a World Series ring, John Olerud. Oh, I loved him. But anyway, I digress. Bronya did go on to have three decent offensive years as the primary Philly first baseman. He hit over 20 home runs in 97, 98, and 99, 20 exactly, two of those seasons, and did get over 100 RBIs, 104 in 98 and 102 in 99. So great counting stats, although, yeah, that was a great offensive era, those late 90s. And Bronya did finish with an OPS under 800 each year and actually was under league average offensively each season, just barely. He was basically a league average hitter at first whose range had declined, and actually wound up being a negative war player for the his tenure with the Phillies. Bronya tried to hang around for a couple of years and had brief playing time in 2000 after the Phillies released him with the Red Sox, and 2001 with the Braves before retiring after the 2001 season. Bronya was actually a negative war player for his career. He is as war, according to Baseball Reference, is negative 1.1. He had nearly 3,000 major league at-bats, 2,958. Had 106 homers, hit 269, drove in 458 runs. His on-base percentage was 320, slugging of 445, and OPS of 764, and OPS plus of 96. Basically league average offensive numbers, and given the first base position, not ideal. However, he was certainly more than that for the Mets, where Bronya had the best period of his career. As a Met over parts of three seasons, Bronya recorded a B-War of 3.4, including that impressive 1995 season, where he was good for 2.3 WAR over the full season, and he was good for 1.2 over just 39 games in that incredible stretch that he had for the Mets in 1994 when he first came up. He had 36 homers and 126 RBIs as a Met and hit .291, .837 on base percentage, and .837 OPS, and a .121 OPS plus. Bronius suffered through his share of medical issues, both during his career and after. Of course, in addition to the normal wear and tear and physical stress of playing baseball, Bronia had was diagnosed with a form of spinal arthritis during his career. It's something he had to take medication for on a daily basis. And in fact, there were rumors, I think, when the Mets traded him that part of the reason was their concern about that. And in fact, Bronia is the national spokesperson for the Spondylitis Association of America, the form of spinal arthritis that he suffers from. He also, since his career, suffered from testicular cancer, which, again, he's also bounced back from, happy to report. He's had a surgery for that in 2015. When healthy, Rico has not been far from the sports world, though. He has coached or managed in high school and college, both baseball and football, and he was also in the Diamondbacks organization as a manager, in the Angels organization as an assistant to the general manager, and he's also been in the Phillies organization as a coach, and which I think is his most recent posting. Rico Bronia, currently 49 years old, as far as I know, hale and hearty and healthy, and thanks in particular to arriving like a comet in the Mets major league team in 1994, and a fine 1995 season as well. Rico Bronia is, of course, unformidable. Thanks for taking the time to listen to Unformidable. I'd like to wish you all happy holidays, whichever one or ones you may or may not celebrate with all of your loved ones. A great, amazing new year. Hopefully we all have a wonderful 2020, especially the New York Metropolitans. Please go to AmazingAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. You can follow Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can find this and all of our amazing pods wherever you get your podcasts. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, and the show is at Unformidable. Thank you, and let's go Mets.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.